This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Through the hour, Zorba here to help you by answering your questions about health and fitness and nutrition. Let me give you our toll-free number. A good time right now to give us a call at 800-462-7413. In addition to helping you with your problems about health or fitness, Zorba, we have some interesting research to talk
teeth
about.
Teeth bleaching. You know, when you bleach your teeth, you see advertisements for over-the-counter stuff and lots of people going to their dentist to have it done. What are the dangers of bleaching? But really, what are the dangers of over-bleaching?
Dangers of over-bleaching. One's teeth.
You bet. They actually exist. And trans fats. Getting them out of the diet. As we know, KFC has decided to get trans fats out of their chicken.
Oh, and states are thinking about outlawing trans fats and countries.
Let's talk about it and countries. Let's talk about trans fats. Where do they fit in your diet, or where don't they fit into your diet?
Uh-huh, and we'll try to have a little fun along the way here, too. Oh, and our recipe.
Spicy turkey burritos with salsa. No trans fats in this recipe. I guarantee it.
Excellent, and I bet we have a medical myth buster as
well. We do. We do, Tom.
Lots of reasons to stay tuned here to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. A listener joins in now, Zorba, from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
Great. Well, I just recently had a physical and found out that I have pretty bad depth perception. And I never realized this until I actually went to go get my physical. I'm in the military, and this is kind of a key thing for me, having depth perception. I was wondering if there's any exercises I could do to help out.
Let me ask first, because usually at a regular doctor's physical exam, they don't do the eye thing. So how did this come up in your physical, or was it with an eye doctor?
It was with the flight doctor. I'm in the flying field, so it's one of the things they check.
So the rest of us don't have this at our physical exams, but obviously the military would, especially flight people. Zorba?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I've ever checked anyone for,
right,
you know, for depth perception when I'm actually seeing them. So now you've been in the military for some time, I take it, right?
Right, about 6 years now.
So how did this come up now that you don't have depth perception? Because this is a significant perceptual issue if you're flying.
Yeah.
Right. They used to use one test, and now the test has become harder, mm-hmm, or more restrictive.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just the difference between those two tests apparently made the difference in whether I passed or failed this depth perception test.
Uh-huh. So in other words, you didn't meet the qualification based on this new, I assume, more sensitive, maybe it wasn't a more sensitive test.
Do you wear glasses or contacts?
I do wear glasses. Uh-huh.
But this is a perceptual issue, and obviously if they picked it up, the first question I would have is this an accurate test?
Well, I would assume so. It was done by the eye doctor. It wasn't just done by a regular, like, general practitioner or anything.
Yeah, what did the eye doctor say then?
There's a few different rows where you have to pick out the circle that sticks out.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm familiar with those rows. Yeah. We can all remember those rows.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And you have to get past a certain number of them. Mm-hmm. I think there's like a 12 total or 8 total,
mm-hmm,
and you have to get past a certain number in order to pass.
What'd you do?
Like 5 of them correct.
Out of how many? Out of 12?
Out of 8, uh-huh, I believe, or 10. 5
uh-huh
out of 10.
5 out of 10.
It was, yes.
Well, 5 out of 10 isn't really very good, is it?
It is.
When you think about that.
You're right.
But the other times, you haven't had any trouble with this.
Right. Well, this is the first time I took this more restrictive test.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he wants to know, is there anything he can do?
Your vision, you're not, he looked, your doctor, he or she looked at the visual perception, didn't discover that your vision was any different one way versus the other in terms of your ability to focus, right?
Right.
I'd redo the test.
Okay.
I'd redo the test.
Yeah, but if the test holds.
There's nothing that I know of that you can actually do to teach yourself depth perception such
yeah
as that in
no
that
exercise
area. There is no, because what they're doing with the circles,
mm-hmm,
when they're circles in a flat field, is they are measuring your cognitive ability in your brain. And basically, we don't think about this,
mm-hmm,
but it's an ability in the brain to be able to measure the difference between the right eye and the
mm-hmm
left eye and when the images are in there. And you're born with that, and this is hardwired, and I do not know of anything that you can do to change your ability and your perception.
Yes, is this going to affect your Air Force career?
No, because of the career field that I am in, because I've got to a certain point in the test, I'm still able to do the job that I do.
Oh, excellent.
But I would never be able to, like, say, fly a plane.
Right.
Yeah, what I would, that's what I would, just repeat the test. Test, there's an error rate in every test you do. Nothing is 100%.
Right.
I'd say, I want to go back. I haven't noticed anything. I want to repeat the test. Two tests or three tests in a row, that means you're hardwired, and that's it. And basically, what you've done in your brain from birth is you have actually taken that and, you know, and you've managed to overcome that with other things. One question, did you have any trouble when you were a child with something called amblyopia, where they had to patch one eye versus the other because you had a weak, quote, a lazy eye?
No, but funny you say that, because that does run in my family.
Because that's where it is. If you take one eye and you're not and it doesn't develop properly, you can actually have situations like this. And I wonder if you may have had it to a very mild extent at birth. You overcame it, so you don't notice things except under these test situations. Repeat the test, see if it's real.
Very interesting.
That's what I do.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you very much.
At 800-462-7413. So, Zorba, you know how interested I am in keeping my teeth white and sparkling. So you think if I overdo those white strip sorts of things, I could actually harm my teeth?
You know, Tom, I mean, you're not the cosmetic guy who, I mean, if they had to sell whitening strips to you, that they would obviously make no money at all and they'd go out of business.
You're saying I have ugly yellow teeth?
No, it's just not your thing, Tom. It's not your thing to be a bleachaholic. You know, if you look at it, whitening has become more and more of an issue as time goes on. And apparently, the industry, the over-the-counter whitening industry, is about $1.5 to $2 billion a year.
Yeah, you see those
and
things when you buy toothpaste. They have those
And that does not include the whitening that goes on in dentist offices.
Right.
Some whitening that is done with special lights 24 hours. Other whitening, which is where you get a little dish that you put in and you basically put this chemical on your teeth every day for a month or for 2 months. And the issue is whitening, when it's done in the proper way, either by a dentist that's trained in it, or over-the-counter whitening, you know, to an extent to white your teeth, is okay. It may produce a little problems with the gums. They may become irritated. That's not the issue. The issue is some people are whitening their teeth over and over and over and over again, and basically continuously putting this acid on their teeth that then can begin to take off the bleach, and when they take off the enamel on the teeth with the bleach, and then essentially you can then start to have teeth that almost look bluish and translucent because they don't have you're basically destroying the teeth. And that's for the over-whiteners. And so there are some people who get their teeth whitened and they continuously wear the strips every night and they think their teeth just don't look perfect like they do on the movies or on TV.
It gets to be an obsession of sorts.
A total obsession. Yeah. And a lot of people, when you see movie stars with white teeth, they don't have white teeth. They have veneers. They have had white caps put on their teeth.
They don't bleach
totally
them out
white.
Like the rest of the
they're
people.
Fake.
They're fake teeth. Yeah.
Just like fake breasts. Just like fake, for men who have fake pectoral muscles, just like other cosmetics, basically a lot of people with totally pearly white teeth don't have a bleach. They actually have fake teeth that have been placed on top, which is a veneer.
So what's the advice here? How often should people
The bottom line is, teeth bleaching is okay. Done by a professional who knows what they're doing, it's fine. But you've got to follow the guidelines. You can have a touch-up every
strips,
so often.
Even the strips you buy in the grocery store are okay.
They're okay, but if you do them continuously, they're not. That's the issue.
So
it's
what's
the continuously?
Every
well,
couple
if you
of years,
follow the instructions on there, which is to use them for 8 or 12 weeks, then you stop, you give your teeth a rest, you give your gums a rest, and then you do the touch-up on a periodic basis. Depends on which methodology you use. But it does make a difference for people. And if people feel better about having glistening white teeth, there's nothing wrong with it. Just don't overdo it like everything else. Moderation in all things, including tooth whitening.
800-462-7413. It's our toll-free number. You'll use it if you have a question for Zorba. 800-462-7413. See if we can help a listener now, Zorba, in Wilmore, Kentucky. Hi.
Hi, I'm so glad to talk to y'all.
Glad you called. How can we help?
Well, I was on an antidepressant, first Sarazone, then Lexapro for 5 years. After my mother passed away and life settled down, I decided to go off of it. I didn't like the numbing of emotions and the decreased creativity.
Mm-hmm.
So during that time that I was weaning myself, I was hit from behind and began seeing a chiropractor, which I still see on a weekly or monthly basis
hit,
if needed.
In your car, you were hit from behind.
Oh, yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
When I weaned myself off the Lexapro, I noticed a lot of joint pain, especially in my neck, shoulders, and upper back. So I had a physical. My internist said that he ruled out rheumatoid arthritis and said it was probably fibromyalgia. he put me on Cymbalta for the pain, which, as you know, is an antidepressant. And I've taken it for about 6 months at the lowest possible dose. It helps somewhat with the pain, but it's become less effective since I started taking it. And my question is, what kind of non-pharmacological things can I do to reduce the pain?
Well, first of all, just for a second on the pharmacology, how much Cymbalta are you taking?
It is the lowest dose.
So you're taking 30 milligrams?
30 milligrams.
Yeah, and Cymbalta can also go up to 60 milligrams twice daily. I just mention that because some people don't do well on 30. Some people need 60 milligrams a day. Some people need 60 milligrams twice daily. So you're really on a very low dose of it, and that, from a pharmacological point of view, may not be working because you don't have the right dose, and you have to tailor it. When it comes to pain of any sort, as you know, you have fibromyalgia. You know what pain is like.
Mm-hmm.
And with fibro, the pain tends to come and go and come and go. It tends to be remitting, and then it stops, and it's a whole issue, as you know, with fibromyalgia,
mm-hmm.
you know, as a chronic pain. And there's nothing that's going to get rid of your pain 100%. So don't even think about that, and then you'll be in a different spot. And I think that's important with chronic pain, to realize, hey, I may not get rid of my pain all the way, but maybe I can reduce it and make it a little bit more manageable, and that will allow me to function better. And that's kind of a better goal. And maybe you have days that you have no pain, but chances are you're going to have pain on and off forever. How do you tolerate it? Exercise, what works for you. So for some people, it's general physical exercise such as running or jogging, and for other people, it's Pilates, and for other people, it's yoga, and for other people, it's stretching exercises and a physical therapist. You have to find an exercise regime that works for you. That's the most important non-pharmacological thing you can do. What are you doing right now for exercise?
Well, I do stretching exercises, and I've started doing yoga.
Who taught you, and what stretchings do you do, and how long do you do it?
Well, it's not as regular as it should be. That's
really one of the important key points of chronic pain is you have to do chronic exercise.
Right.
So what you have to do is you have to say, I'm going to get trained properly from yoga or physical therapy or whatever. I'm going to get trained on the right way to do a stretch. There's a right way and a wrong way, and you may be doing it sometimes right and sometimes wrong. I don't know. Then you've got to say, okay, I'm going to devote myself for 10 to 15 minutes in the morning, 10 to 15 minutes in the evening. This is what I need to get better. That's your chief non-pharmacological way of doing it.
Okay.
Getting trained by someone who you know of, physical therapist, Pilates, as I said, that's part of it. In other words, I can't learn much from books. It's not the way I learn when it comes to exercise. I look at those stick figures and I go, what is this? My right foot's supposed to go behind my left ear? It doesn't make any sense.
Right.
For some people, I've got to have somebody show me. I think that's how most people work.
That sounds great. I appreciate that.
And do it. And do it regularly and give it a month to 6 weeks. And I can almost guarantee you that you will have an improvement in your pain and your pain syndrome.
Yeah. So. Appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Again, our number is 800-462-7413. And a listener with us now, Zorba, in Boyceville, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help you?
Well, in December of last year, I was diagnosed with a herniated disc.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only 33, so I'm a little young to have something like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I got three steroid injections in my back that really helped a lot with the pain. I moved up to Wisconsin here, and at the end of the month, my movers came with my stuff, because I had been living in Florida for 4 years. My movers came with my stuff, and I helped unload the semi with all my items, and my pain since then has started to come back.
You moved from Florida to Wisconsin for the weather, I'm assuming.
Oh, I'm just debating this decision. I don't know.
I got it. So wait a minute. You hired these movers to move your stuff, and then you moved a lot of stuff with the movers.
Well, once they got up here, I helped unload the truck and stuff. And since then, I must have hit a nerve or something.
Yeah, you obviously clearly did. How you were lifting heavy stuff or light stuff?
Just a combination of both. A lot of turning and twisting.
Uh-huh.
And,
So you've had a long time where you've continued to have the pain and discomfort,
right?
From there, taking any anti-inflammatory drugs at all? Over-the-counter meds, naproxen.
I was given a prescription for tramadol.
Tramadol. Okay, tramadol is a narcotic. It's a mild narcotic. Kind of works a little like an antidepressant and a little like a narcotic. It's a good drug.
I really haven't noticed it help much with the pain at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I've really stopped taking it because it just doesn't seem to work.
Mm-hmm. How many tablets were you taking?
I would start out with one, mm-hmm. and I would give it like a half an hour or so,
yeah.
and then take a second one.
Well, you have to take 1 to 2 tablets 4 times daily of tramadol to make it work. Just to let you know from that point of view.
Oh.
So you might have been on a subtherapeutic dose. You've got to take 50 to 100 milligrams 4 times daily. Most people for tramadol end up at about 250 to 300 milligrams. It's the most popular analgesic in Europe. It's not that common in the U.S. It's very good. It's an analgesic. It's not an anti-inflammatory. It's an analgesic. But you want to find something to control your pain so you can begin to stretch and do exercise. If you go into a massage therapist, chiropractor, or physical therapist...
No, not this time, because I just really don't have the extra money to pay for things like that. But there's exercises that I would like to do. I've gained a couple extra pounds here since I've been back to Wisconsin.
It's coming to the state. As soon as you cross the border,
yeah.
The governor gives you 10 pounds when you cross the border, and your dividend is 2 to 4 pounds a year.
Yep.
Everyone knows that in the state of Wisconsin. As soon as you leave, the weight just rolls off your body.
Well, I need to be doing some kind of exercise or
yes,
something.
Yes, you do. Now, if you know previous physical therapy exercises, start with those. If you can't spend the money, which obviously you can't, go and look on the web. All you have to do is Google in physical therapy exercises for your neck. What you're going to find when you do that is you will find exercises on the web. And some of them actually have little movies now because I've run in them when you Google them, and you can actually see somebody doing the exercise.
Okay.
What I would also do is I would go to YouTube. And I look in YouTube the same way, because YouTube has lots of things that, funny things and other things that people pop into the YouTube space. But there are also exercises on YouTube. And what you want to do is visually have somebody show you stretching exercises that you can do. 5 to 10 minutes in the morning, 5 to 10 in the evening. And I would take 2 Aleve tablets, generic Aleve, 2 Aleve morning and evening.
Okay.
Very useful. The Aleve, the exercise, the Ultram if you really need it for the pain, and start to move on that. And, of course, the steroid injections. You know, chronic pain it's a bummer, and it has no useful function other than make our lives miserable. And your goal is to get on top of it so you can function better. And then the pain begins to sort of dissipate. So
now, would sit-ups counteract the benefits of the steroid injections?
No, not necessarily. It's all a function of pain. If after you do an exercise you have more pain, that may not be the right exercise.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the concept no pain, no gain. That's for 22-year-olds that are training in marathons. They're not for people who have chronic pain. Seriously. They're for people who have good muscles, young muscles. They're training in marathons. They got to push themselves. And they say no pain, no gain. It's not the same thing at all for people who have chronic pain in
right,
any way.
Right, okay.
So, good luck.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, yeah. Thank you very much.
Appreciate the call. You said tramadol was not an anti-inflammatory, was an analgesic. What's an analgesic?
Analgesic is a painkiller. It's a fancy name for a painkiller. We call them analgesics. I thought it was a common term. Obviously, it's not
well,
a common term. What else is
it? Maybe, and
brain?
I may be the only human being on Earth that didn't. But
I don't think so, Tom.
Oh, okay.
I don't think so. I think you're probably one of many beings on Earth.
A request here, Zorba, in our Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox.
Ooh,
it comes
email.
To us from Bonnie in Southern Oregon. Bonnie would like us to know that her 104-year-old aunt is a loyal listener and fan of Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Oh, wow. How neat.
She probably has the longevity code, I'm
How
guessing.
Neat.
Recently, Bonnie writes, recently I heard Dr. Zorba describe how to reset circadian rhythm, and I wrote it down, and now I can't find the instructions.
Oh, my daughter, about the insomnia one.
My That's daughter, right. who is in college, is having trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep. Our producer, Adam Friedrich, had the opposite problem.
College.
It was very easy for him to get to sleep.
Awake.
Stay, yeah, exactly.
Right. It's the same thing. He's sleeping right now. I can just look at him.
Anyway, she says, I would like to pass on the instructions to her.
I recommend that she have her daughter go to the library and start to read something she has to read for a class. She'll have no trouble falling asleep
yeah.
while she doesn't put her head down. And you're out. I remember those days.
Yeah.
Well, one of the issues is to reset your circadian rhythm, which is your natural rhythm that occurs, is you've got to develop a regular sleep time. So very hard in college, but you can often do it 5 days a week. So let's say the sleep time is 11 o'clock p.m. It's 11 p.m. for 5 days. That's very important. The second thing to reset it is you have to induce a little a little bit of time where you basically are not sleeping, so you're going to introduce the fact that you're tired and fatigued. And the way to do that is only to get maybe 5 to 6 hours of sleep for 2 nights in a row. So on night number 3, you are really tired. So for 2 nights in a row, you go to sleep at 2 and you get up at 6 or 7.
So you stay
next
awake
night, you
longer
go to sleep
than
at 2, you get up at 6 yeah. or 7. So and then on night number 3, you go to sleep at 11, and usually then you will have a deep sleep until 6 or 7. And then you do that on a regular basis. That's the first step, to reintroduce that normal cycle. A little sleep deprivation is important. Second step that's important is look at the caffeine. A lot of kids in college, certainly a lot of kids, drink caffeine. And there's hidden caffeine in things like energy drink. Is she a Red Bull drinker? Mm-hmm. Red Bull has an equivalent caffeine of about 1.5 to 2 cups of coffee. If she's drinking 3 or 4 Red Bulls, or the equivalent of that, which, by the way, is $10 a day of Red Bull, she's going to have more caffeine than she really needs. Mm-hmm. I'd cut out all the caffeine. That may make a difference for her and help her get a good night's sleep so she can get A's on those tests. But the library, if that fails, go to the library, sleep there all night. That's what I found was useful for me.
Well, once you're rested, send along your comments, questions, and tips to us. Just send an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Stick around. We have our recipe coming up. Lots more of your calls. We have some interesting research. We have our medical myth buster. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Maybe our favorite time of the show. No, that would be unfair to the callers, wouldn't it? It's recipe time
it's
in any case.
It's recipe time.
It's one of our favorite times.
It's one of our favorite times in the show.
And this one for spicy turkey burritos with salsa.
That's right. That's right. Good for anyone who may have, no, listen up, anyone who may have leftover turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we have leftover turkey in our refrigerator and trying to figure out what to do. This is a great recipe.
Excellent.
For that. Start out with 2 tablespoonfuls of olive oil.
2 big tea olive oil.
Always use extra virgin. Find the olive oil you like. I happen to like an olive oil that really has a very deep flavor to it, and I spend more money on olive oil. I do not buy cheap olive oil.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't buy $10 a million gallons of olive oil, but I don't. It's cheap olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
Good olive oil. 4 medium plum tomatoes, seeded and diced. You can use canned tomatoes if you don't have the fresh ones. The fresh ones will be better.
4 medium plum tomatoes, seeded and diced.
That's right. 1/2 medium jalapeno pepper, seeded and diced.
1/2 medium-sized jalapeno pepper,
that's
seeded
right.
and diced.
1 cup of fresh cilantro.
1 cup of cilantro.
1/4 cup of lime juice.
1/4 cup of lime juice.
Now, there are different kinds of lime juice. What I've discovered is, and I've gone to my local grocery store, I buy the standard lime juice, which is called Real Lime from the company that makes Real Lemon, whoever they are. And then I bought other lime juices or lemon juices that are there. Find a lime juice that you like. Fresh lime tastes even better. It's a little bit more expensive, but if you take fresh lime juice and you use that, this will be so much brighter. It has a much brighter smell to it. But otherwise, find a lime juice that you like. Some lime juice is more bitter than other lime juice.
Mm-hmm.
I would use fresh limes for this. And there's no comparison.
Okay. And?
1 red onion sliced.
1 red onion sliced.
That's right. 2 bell peppers seeded and sliced.
2 bell peppers seeded and sliced.
Yeah, and I generally use the green ones. They're cheaper. But if there's a sale on reds or yellows or purples, I'd use those because,
uh-huh.
once again, they're prettier.
Right.
1 pound leftover turkey meat. If anyone's got leftover turkey meat in their refrigerator, this is for you.
1 pound of leftover turkey meat.
That's
and
right.
how
and,
do we
and,
do we
and,
cut it up?
Yeah, you take a whole turkey and pull it apart, and then you've got leftover turkey.
Okay.
Yeah, you dice it, essentially.
Okay. All right.
Now, if you don't want to use leftover turkey meat, you can actually take a turkey breast and use that for this recipe. And turkey breasts, as you know, are ubiquitous. They're all around. Cut we it. Often right. make a turkey breast in our house. We like them. Yep. A tablespoonful of ground cumin.
One big tea, ground cumin.
Now, cumin is often expensive in a regular grocery store. It is cheap if you go to an Asian grocery store, an international grocery store. And that's where I buy my cumin. I have no idea why it's expensive in regular grocery stores. Mm-hmm. Mexican grocery stores, it's a common spice. Mm-hmm. Four flour tortillas, a burrito
Easy
size.
Easy for you to say. Four flour tortillas, burrito
you
size.
You making fun of me?
No,
is that
not
what
at
you're
all.
Doing?
I would never do that.
Yeah. Salt and pepper to taste. Use kosher salt. It tastes better in a recipe like this because it's a bigger, sort of a bigger structure.
S&P to taste.
That's right. And a bigger structure, meaning it actually clumps a little bit.
Right.
Okay, so go preheat the oven to 300 degrees. Then go to the other part of the kitchen, and we're going to make the salsa in a mixing bowl. Combine and
the
stir.
The other part of the kitchen?
That's right, the other part
what
of the kitchen.
What if we have a little kitchen? Like
well,
that?
Then you can't make this recipe. Maybe
oh.
kind of turn to the side away
oh,
from
okay.
the oven.
Right.
That's
right.
what I mean.
All right.
Combine and stir a tablespoonful of olive oil, tomatoes, the jalapeno, the quarter cup of cilantro, and lime juice, then season with the salt and pepper. Now, for the burritos, in a large nonstick skillet, heat the remaining olive oil, that's a tablespoonful, over medium heat. Then add the red onion, bell peppers, and saute until tender. You know, 10, 15 minutes or so, just until tender. You don't want it to brown. It's really medium or low heat. Then add the turkey and then add the salsa mixture and the cumin and stir it only until it's heated through. Then, if you want to, you can add cheese to that. You can put some jack cheese on top. Add the remaining cilantro. If you don't want cheese, I often don't. You don't have to put the cheese on top. Season with salt and pepper and remove from the heat and cover. Mm. Now, here's how you put it together. Heat a tortilla one at a time in the dry skillet or over an open flame if you've got a gas stove.
Uh-huh.
I don't think I would trust you over an open flame. You really think you could do this over an open flame?
What do you mean?
Like
of course.
Hold it over the gas stove.
Of course. Of course.
I can just see it, you know. The Cooper would be bouncing up and down. You'd forget about it and the kitchen would burn down. I don't think so.
Cooper's my dog, by the way.
Yeah, Cooper's the dog. I think we'll just heat the tortilla in a dry skillet. Forget
right.
the open flame.
Okay.
About 30 seconds on each side till it kind of firms up and is warm. Then spoon a quarter of the turkey mixture along in the center of the tortilla. Fold the sides in just like you see at your local burrito place.
Mm-hmm.
And roll it. Roll the tortilla to sort of enclose the filling. And then place the burrito steam side down on a baking sheet. Put it in the oven to keep warm and serve it when it's finally warm.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. Now here's the best part of the recipe segment. This is the time when the door opens up and our producer, Adam Friedrich,
That's
comes
right.
in.
Adam, were they baked
with the turkey
That's right.
out of the oven?
He has baked an entire turkey for us.
Adam,
where's Adam?
No food.
He's not here.
There's no food.
We can't eat it. How good can the recipe be if we can't eat it?
Well, you'll do a good job when you make it.
It is a good recipe. If you want to get a copy of this recipe, go to our website at zorbapastor.org. You can pull down that recipe, look at some other fun stuff, and remember, we are podcast.
Or we're even willing to send you a copy of the recipe if you'd like. Address your request to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, our zip code 53706. Don't forget to enclose that business-sized self-addressed stamped envelope, and we'll send the recipe along to you. Is the toll-free number. Question for Zorba, call 800-462-7413. Here's a listener with us now, Zorba, in Lafayette, Indiana. Hi.
Hello, Dr. Zorba. Hello, Tom.
How can we help?
Well, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
I have a peculiar condition,
mm-hmm.
and my wife was worried about me, so she said, why don't you call those guys and see what they say?
Mm-hmm.
I sweat profusely when I eat spicy food, and it's becoming, developed more in severity over the years, and so I was just wondering, is there anything to this? Should I worry about it?
I think most of us, when we eat spicy foods, sweat breaks out.
No, Tom, some people sweat a lot. Some people are a little warm. Some people don't sweat at all, but you have gustatory sweating. That's what it's called. Big fancy word, gustatory, means eat, sweating when I eat. And some people, especially if they're in a situation where they don't know the person at the other end of the table that you're eating with, if it's a business person and this is a business lunch, interprets that sweating as anxiety. you know, you're sitting there and you're sweating and you're discussing, you know, the big deal, and you're sweating all over the place, and they think that you're anxious when, in fact, you just have gustatory
sweat. So you call her, you won't be making that spicy turkey burrito and salsa recipe we just gave, huh?
Well, I enjoy food. The recipe sounds great. I enjoy spicy food, uh-huh. So I just have to bring a towel to the table, and sometimes I have to change my shirt. And,
yeah, yeah.
But I don't.
So
I don't
do you
know,
actually have to change your shirt when this happens?
It can be that bad.
It can
sometimes.
Be that bad. Uh-huh. Well, gustatory sweating is not a completely uncommon thing. One of my sons actually has gustatory sweating, and he said, "Dad, what can I do?" And so I've become sort of a mini expert on gustatory sweating, for which, by the way, there is no absolute cure. That's the first thing I want to say. But there's some drugs that work. You're never going to do it. If you take a drug called a beta blocker, sometimes you take enough of it, it'll stop the gustatory sweating. You can try that acutely. Let's say, hey, I'm going to go out to my favorite Mexican restaurant, and just like people take beta blockers for stage fright, for some people, beta blockers actually stop the sweat response. And that's probably the easiest thing, so you take it when you need it. Just like some people take Pepcid AC, which they advertise all the time over the counter before they go and have hot, spicy food, you take a beta blocker, and this might work for you. Drugs like Inderol, that's the name brand, it's propranolol. Atenolol is another drug. These are drugs, there are about six drugs in this class. And for some people, that can make a difference. The other very effective method is to avoid the food that causes you to sweat.
Oh, that's a hard thing, though.
Well, it depends. Have you thought about eating, like, standard Norwegian food, lefse, you know, bland food that doesn't have any spice at all? Forget
what
this
a good idea
stuff.
That is.
Yeah, beige food, all yeah, beige right, food right. Without spice. Highly salty, fatty food without spice in it. Have you thought about that?
No, that's not an option.
It's not an option.
I do have a friend, though, and he said that this condition is called digestive thermogenesis. Is uh-huh. that true?
I've never heard of digestive thermogenesis. Sounds right. Is he selling something, your friend?
No, he just said he said he took a psychology class during college, and that came up.
Digestive thermogenesis. So
is there
it sounds
any truth
great.
To that?
Well, it sounds sci-fi to me. It sounds like this is something that Captain Kirk or Spock would have on Star Trek. He's dying of digestive thermogenesis. Scotty, quick.
It does sound like
quick,
that. Beam him up.
That's right. Beam him up, Scotty. So I must admit, I've never had anyone, but I'm going to try that in my office next week. I'm going to sit with the patient. It doesn't matter what they have. If they've got any gut complaint, I'm going to say you have digestive thermogenesis, and I'll see what the response is. Hey, if it sells as a diagnostic code and I can charge for insurance, then I'll know it's real. No, I don't think I've heard of digestive thermogenesis, or I was away when we discussed that. This is gustatory sweating,
okay.
Which is benign. It's not associated with anything bad, and as you said, you're not going to change your eating habits, so you might... You might actually try a beta blocker next time you see your doctor to see if it stops. Seriously, because then you can go out to restaurants with friends, because people do look at you when you're sweating and they ask you, is there something wrong? Well, try the beta blocker, see if it
okay.
works.
Okay.
And
that's
keep that towel handy, too.
And keep that towel handy. There you go.
Okay, thanks, fellas.
Thanks
a lot for the call. We appreciate it. 1-800-462-7413. Brian, Texas, with us now. Hi.
Hello. Hello, Dr. Zorba. Hello, Tom.
What's up?
I have what they apparently is called a geographic tongue or a contour tongue, which I was told about in my 20s by a dentist that thought it was hilariously funny.
A contour tongue?
Yes.
Zorba, you're nodding. What's a Zorba?
No, it's a geographic tongue, and that's
what
the
does
way
that mean?
You stick out your tongue, and if it is not consistent and has Thomas now sticking out his tongue and me, I can't.
Well, I don't know what a contour tongue.
Mine looks like the map of the world gone wrong.
Right, that's right. The map of the world. It looks. It's called a geographic tongue. Imagine if the world were stamped.
Well,
on
do
your
I
tongue.
Have one?
No, not at all. No,
oh, okay.
You just have a regular tongue. That's all you have. You have.
You mean there
tongue.
Are patterns on the tongue?
There are patterns on the tongue. Exactly.
Okay. All right.
So you've had this, you noticed this in your...
In my 20s.
In your 20s.
Long time ago.
Yeah, so
but
you,
it has become a terrible problem because...
Why?
I have become allergic to anything acid and anything salty,
In other words, you have symptoms from this.
Oh, I have terrible symptoms. Mm-hmm. It's not just my tongue, it's my cheeks, my mm-hmm. lips, everything... just gets burned and full of little ulcers,
mm-hmm,
and so. I just don't know. You get the recipe you gave just now, there was just about nothing I could eat uh-huh, except uh-huh. the turkey.
Uh-huh. Oh, so what do you eat?
Basically, I have to eat at home. I can't eat in restaurants. I eat a lot of baked potatoes. I mm-hmm. eat bread. Mm-hmm. I eat fresh vegetables. There's very few fruits that I can eat. I can't even take fruit juices.
So what have What have you tried? You know, you've obviously gone to dentists and gone to doctors to try different things.
A lot of doctors and dentists, no one seems to be able to give me a cure.
Mm-hmm.
I was given lidocaine at one stage, which helps temporarily.
Well, it helps temporarily, but then you can't, you know, your mouth is numbed. So it's not exactly fun to go out to eat.
Not
with
a pleasant experience.
No, because also my tongue swells, and then it's hard to talk as well, which is rather embarrassing. Plus, I bite the swollen areas on a regular basis.
Now, have you taken antihistamines at all?
Not for that, no. We have high allergy rates here in Bryan and Cottage Station with pollen and all the sorts of wonderful things in the air. And I've taken antihistamines on occasion for those kind of allergies, but never for my mouth.
Okay, I've got a couple of suggestions. First of all, get over-the-counter Claritin, which is loratadine, and I would take two tablets an hour before you eat. See what that does. Two tablets an hour before you eat. See if that works. If that doesn't work, then what I would do is I would go to Benadryl. It'll make you tired, but take 50 to 100 milligrams an hour before you eat. See what happens. If you attenuate the allergic response, that'll be useful. That's kind of the first step, the first step that I would look at. The second thing I would try is there's something called tetracycline swish and swallow, and it is an old remedy from old Dr. Kellogg. Dr. Kellogg came to our town in 1947, and I practiced with him in the 80s. And he always had these old remedies. And a remedy that he would have with this is you get from your doctor tetracycline capsules. It's an antibiotic. You put the capsule in a little bit of water, and then you take it and you swish it around in your mouth. And then you swallow the tetracycline. And tetracycline swish and swallow often changes the flora of the mouth. In other words, the bacteria that live in our mouth, you know, we have these bacteria that live all over our bodies.
I have actually tried biotin for that.
Right, and I would take tetracycline swish and swallow. All of these together might work separately, they might work together. And the final thing, if that fails, is I would talk to your doctor about getting a Flovent. Flovent is a drug that we use for asthma, and instead of inhaling the steroid that we use for asthma into the lungs, I'd spray it over your mouth. And
Flovent.
See, Flovent, F-L-O-V-E-N-T. And see if spray of the steroid into the mouth will also stop this terrible reaction that's occurring. And I would take that twice a day. So I've given you a whole bunch of things.
Lots of stuff, yeah.
Whole bunch of things. Try them all out. In a month, give us a call back. Let us know. I'd love to know what happens to it.
Okay.
But I would try. All of these are trying to stop the inflammatory response and allow the right bacteria to live in the body and try to get rid of the baddies by making the goodies live there.
That would be wonderful. Because then I could actually use some of your recipes.
Yeah, then you can use the recipes. Maybe you'd even give us one. Good luck, and please let us know.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. A quick question from the Zorba Pastor on your health inbox now. This one from Ann in Vineland, New Jersey. Ann writes, "Hi guys, a friend turned me on to yerba mate, which I think you've talked about on the show. I'd like to give it out as a holiday gift. But since it's a stimulant, I wonder if I should give it to anyone with high blood pressure."
Well, it's a stimulant like coffee. In other words, it has a little caffeine in it. It's perfectly fine to use yerba mate. It has less caffeine than regular coffee that's brewed, certainly less than espresso. So the answer is it's no problem. You
Good.
Can certainly give it to somebody. One of the interesting things about yerba mate is we brought a lot of it back. We were in Costa Rica, and then when we went through customs, the guy opened it up and he said, "What's all this green stuff?"
Because
it looks like dope.
Yeah.
We said, "It's yerba mate. You brew the tea." And he looked at us. I mean, it's Penny and I. And at that time, our kids were younger than our four kids. And I think he decided he wasn't going to put it in the dog. It wasn't sniffing it out. Then, indeed, this wasn't what he thought it was, that it was yerba mate. So anytime you say yerba mate, I think customs.
That's a good line. People are going to be using this all the time.
Right.
Oh, it's yerba mate.
It's not dope. It's yerba mate, officer.
Well, one gift we always enjoy, your emails. Keep them coming. Send along your comments, tips, recipes, and questions to
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls coming up, some interesting research, our medical myth buster as well, here on Zorba Pastor and Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number again, if you have a question for Zorba, 1-800-462-7413. But before we take that next call, interesting, I think, Zorba, that more and more states, localities, countries, even some of the fast food places either have or are considering doing away with trans fats.
Right.
So let's talk about trans fats.
Well,
How bad are they?
Trans fats were initially invented, if you will, because they were thought to be a healthy alternative to butter and buttery products. So what you do is you then develop what are called hydrogenated oils, and the fast food industry and the prepackaged pastry industry embraced them because you could make, for instance, baked goods that would last on the shelf for years without tasting any different than they did before, and you could use oil that contains trans fats over and over and over again before it became rancid. And who knew until recently that trans fats were as bad as lard in terms of elevating cholesterol?
Oh, so
they're not good.
They really are
bad for us.
So it's a good thing for the states and the other countries, whatever, to be considering doing away
with it. Well, I think it's a good thing to be doing away with it. Whether or not the state, you know, whether or not a city or a state should say we're not going to have trans fats is a political issue.
You don't think they should be
illegal? I don't put them in the same category at all as smoking. You want to smoke a cigarette in a restaurant, it affects me.
Yeah.
You want to smoke your cigarette at home, I don't really care at all. I mean, if you eat trans fats in a city, it doesn't bother me.
If I'm your patient, you care.
No, if you're my patient, I care. But I mean, I don't think
you
should.
If I'm your friend, you don't care.
Yeah,
don't you care if I'm killing myself?
I care, believe me. But I mean, whether or not we should ban trans fats is really a political issue.
Yeah.
People have a right to eat all. I mean, it'd be like banning junk food.
Are there good substitutes for trans fats?
Yeah, you can use certain types of soybean oils. The reality is the fast food industry is now scrambling to find a substitute that has a long shelf life and tastes the same. And that's the problem. They taste a little different. And when it comes to prepackaged goods or fast food goods, we have a certain taste that we like at the fast food restaurant that we have. When you change the oil, you change the taste, and that's part of the issue.
But I've heard that some of these places where they have done away with the trans fats and substituted, that really nobody can tell the difference, that the taste
That's because that's what they're working on, engineering ways to make it taste exactly the same as it did without that. Trying to make something healthier. But getting back to this society issue, what's important as a society is to realize when foods aren't good for us, when they're bad for us. And then as a society, we have to use education like this to talk about it, and then it's your choice. You go and buy things in the store now, a lot of times it says zero trans fats. You're going to be much more likely to buy that item. And now the FDA and USDA has said trans fats have to be on the packages. That helps you decide. That makes your health better. That's good legislation.
1-800-462-7413, the number to use if you have a question for Zorba. A listener now, Zorba, in Texarkana, Texas. Hi.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Oh, we appreciate it. What's up?
Well, I wanted to see if Zorba could answer a question for me. For the past few years, I've noticed that when I use baby wipes and antibacterial wipes, along with some lotions over the counter, that I tend to have an allergic reaction. I get these patchy red places, almost like a fungus, or it looks like a burn, and my hands crack and bleed. So I'm assuming there's some ingredient or chemical in these products that's causing this to happen to me. I was hoping Zorba might could tell me what I could start watching for on the product labels.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, there undoubtedly is something in the product. And the problem is, of course, we don't know what it is. So it could be the perfume in the product. There are lots of perfumes, you know, baby wipes. They're all perfumed. So that's what we smell when we open it up, and we associate certain smells with cleanliness. So we have a certain smell, and we go, oh, that's a clean smell, and we like it. I mean, and these are manufactured smells to what people consider to be clean, you know, a bleach-like smell or whatever that is. So, and these are proprietary products. So in other words, they don't have to publish everything that's in there. You're not consuming it. It's not the same as the FDA requirements. It's in the cosmetic realm. Mm-hmm. And when it's in the cosmetic realm, when you pick up a cosmetic, it doesn't list all the ingredients in there at all. So you'll never know what it may be. But what you do to find out if there's anything that works for it is you get a whole bunch of different baby wipes in the small amount, and you try one after another, and you find out if you tolerate one. In other words, you might tolerate one because it has a different smell or a different chemical. But now, what do you use these baby wipes for?
Well, I have grandchildren, and so when I go to visit them, I notice it. I have to be real careful about, you know, continuing to wipe my hands because my hands get so raw that I just hardly can't stand it.
Right. I'm not surprised. It's probably the perfume that's in there. And you want to look for a hypoallergenic type lotion. It's the perfumes that are usually in there as well as the chemicals, and you have to see if you tolerate one. And by the way, if that fails, you can always use as a wipe instead of something that is disposable. You can use something that you wash out. So you can use what was traditionally used before there were baby wipes, which were another diaper, you know, with water in which you wipe the baby, and then you put the diaper in a plastic bag and deal with that later in terms of washing it. But you're allergic to something in the chemical. You just got to try. You just have to try one after another.
Okay, that's what I've been doing.
One after another. You will not. You won't know from the label because it's not. It doesn't list everything. So.
Okay. Well,
good luck.
Thank you.
How many grandchildren do you have?
I have two.
Oh, how old are they?
2 and 4.
Oh, how sweet. How sweet.
They are sweet.
Well, thanks for the call.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
800-462-7413. And time now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster.
I love these.
We're going to talk this time about the old urban myth that's a little shocking. It's the old tale that showering during a thunderstorm may be unhealthy for you, may kill you. Because of the lightning.
That's right. May kill you because of the lightning. So you want to know if this is a true or
false. Can I take a shower during a thunderstorm?
No, you can't. No, you can't. The chances are that there are 10 people a year, 5 to 10 people a year in the United States who die from taking showers in the middle of a lightning storm.
Oh.
That's the estimate. 5 to 10 people die.
So
now,
it's
keep in
not
mind,
a myth.
Keep in mind, 50,000 people die in car crashes.
Yeah.
250 people die from venom injuries from wasps. The myth is, I mean, the chances are very small, but the chances are there. Now, the claim is based on the idea that a bolt of lightning comes and hits a house, even one, you know, a house that you've got protected maybe with a lightning rod, but it can still travel through the plumbing. If you have metal pipes, it'll travel through the metal pipes.
Well, who doesn't have metal pipes?
A lot of people don't have metal pipes. They have PVC pipes. But even if they don't have metal pipes, if they have PVC pipes, the electricity can still travel through the water because the water has salts and impurities. And it's estimated that 10 to 20 people a year are shocked, not necessarily killed, are shocked while bathing or using faucets or handling appliances during storms.
Appliances that are plugged in.
Thunderstorm, you hold on to the refrigerator, beware. You open up the refrigerator. Thunderstorm, you hold on to the television set, beware.
Now
it can go through the television
joking set.
No,
but,
I'm not.
But people,
it's the same as being in the bathtub or in the shower. It's not that the bathtub and shower are worse. It's holding on to anything in the house that's metal that can conduct electricity through the electrical lines.
I get it. So that during a thunderstorm, I must sit in the chair and quiver. And quiver.
And quiver. That's exactly it. And fear that lightning is going to affect you. That's right. So you won't be one of those 10 or 20 people out of 300 million people
who
have been shocked while they've washed their hands. Don't wash your hands during a lightning storm. Go the full ball of X. Quiver.
Sit and quiver.
Sit
well,
and quiver.
I think it's safe to send us an email during a thunderstorm. Well, maybe not.
No, it's
maybe
not
wait
safe.
Till the thunderstorm
I'm
is
sorry.
Over.
It's
then
not safe.
Send us the myth you'd like Zorba to bust. Just send that email to
Zorba@WPR.org. Send us your myths. We will solve them.
800-462-7413 to talk with Zorba. Racine, Wisconsin with us now. Hi.
Hi, Tom and Zorba.
What's up?
Well, my question is about my 8-year-old son. And he sometimes wakes up at night with, I guess what I'd best describe as restless legs. And this may be 4 or 5 times a year, so it's not all that frequent. And usually it follows after, you know, running around or being very active all day like an 8-year-old can do so easily. And my question comes from on a previous show, a caller had asked about restless legs or leg discomfort. And for my son, it's kind of behind his knees or the back of his knees. And on this previous call, you had suggested calcium. And so we've always thought maybe it's related to being dehydrated or we'd push the water and maybe have him have a banana for potassium. So my question is whether him taking a calcium supplement may help out that problem.
Yeah, I don't think in an 8-year-old it's going to help the problem. I mean, and I don't really, I think, kids should get calcium when they have growing bodies, they ought to be try to get it through dairy products.
Right.
Does he like dairy products?
Yeah, he drinks. He's a good Wisconsinite. He drinks lots of milk.
Yeah, lots of milk. So he doesn't need that with calcium.
Yeah.
But tell me a little bit about more this what he does with his legs. This is when he's going to sleep, or
actually,
when
a lot of times he'll wake up in the middle of the night. So he may be running around all day long, and he's in good health, and he eats fairly well. Lots of fruits
and he's
vegetables.
He's an athletic little
yeah,
boy.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. He loves to run around and do stuff.
Yeah.
But he usually wakes up, I don't know, maybe 1, 2 in the morning, and it's he'll say, oh, my legs hurt. And it's kind of a restless, like, it's not a cramp. It's not like a Charlie horse.
It's not like a Charlie horse.
Because
whether it was a Charlie horse at all. So what do you do now? Do you go and massage his legs?
Well, ibuprofen usually, I think, relaxes him enough that he sleeps well. In the morning, he's fine.
Yeah. I do not think the calcium will do this. I'm not quite sure exactly what's going on with him. You can get growing pains, but at 8, you're not doing a huge growth. It's not like when you are 12 or 14. You certainly can get cramps if you've done a lot of exercise. I think I'd look back and see when does this do it to him. Is there a certain exercise that he's doing late at night, that he's running around or he's engaged in soccer on that day or something else to try to eyeball it with a diary to see if there's something that is producing this. Is there an activity during the day that's actually producing this? But I don't think a supplement's going to do anything, and I don't think it's quite clear as to what it is. Quite often, with kids who have muscular problems, you look back and you find out it's something they're doing on a recurrent basis. So I diary this. You know, that's what you do. You've got to sort of bird dog it to find out what the precursors are to this activity.
All right.
Good luck.
All right, thank you.
Good luck.
Appreciate the call. Zorba, thank you.
A pleasure, Tom.
For a copy of this week's recipe and all things Zorba, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org.
And don't forget, our producer is available anytime
24/7.
800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Produced by Adam Friedrich. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director. Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1124Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.